Welcome us online and those of you who have turned up to the class today. We're going to be doing a class on karma today. We'll enter it by doing what we normally do, which is we'll say some prayers together, we'll do a brief meditation, and then we'll commence the class. So in the class, there are moments where we pause and you can ask questions. There'll be a meditation, and then we'll do the next little section. Okay, so let's begin by generating a good mind for this class. So we're going to start with refuge in bodhicitta. But before we engage in the actual prayers, I'll set the visualization up and so forth. So first, please just get comfortable in your seat. Just make sure your back is straight, your shoulders relaxed, and you're sitting comfortably. You can have your eyes open or closed. So when you're sitting comfortably, relax and just let the body breathe itself. Feeling the body breathe itself, relax into awareness. And from within the space of relaxed awareness, imagine that the nature of the ground beneath you is a starry sapphire light. And it's as soft and light as a cloud. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And in the space in front of you, on the throne, with a cushion of lotus-sunned moons, appears Buddha Shakyamuni. The Buddha is surrounded by the assembly of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities, and other enlightened beings. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings, people like your parents, brothers and sisters, family members, friends, enemies, and strangers. Now recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive today. And to have the leisure and opportunity to attain your own spiritual goal. But you must act quickly because things are not quite right, and the world does not exist as it seems to. Nevertheless, you do have a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The Buddha, his teachings, the Dharma, and his followers, the Sangha. This is a safe direction. Now, to make the offering of practice to these three rare sublime ones as purely as possible, imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. You're holding a vajra and bell within a sphere of great bliss. So within the sphere of great bliss, being empty and cognizant, join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So, in response to this prayer, from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down, dissolving into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. Their negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Their health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. They're cleansed by wisdom and skillful means. Recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. And then decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four immeasurable states. Then join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this aspiration of ours, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. So relax a little more and pay a little attention to the exhalation of breath. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for accumulated merit. And we say in front of them, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great and loving. So we've purified activities of our body, speech, and mind, and we've accumulated merit. Now, to prevent ourselves from clinging to these two activities, we imagine that our body, speech, and mind, our virtues, our enjoyments are all transformed into the environment of a pure land. And we offer this to the Buddha and his spiritual entourage. And we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, stirring with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, full of consciousness, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamayatayami. We've released the offering, and the Buddha accepts it. Smiles with delight, and we meet the gaze of the Buddha. So, looking into the eyes of the Buddha, we recollect renunciation, we wish to abandon all the causes of suffering and be liberated. Bodhicitta, I wish to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of others, and the correct view that all phenomena lack inherent existence, yet dependently arise and are designated. And recollecting this, we aspire to be a Buddha ourselves. So, induced by our wishes and our prayers, there emerges from the Buddha in front of us a second figure, another Guru Buddha, who now absorbs into us. And your form clearly becomes that of the Guru Buddha. So radiating from the syllable hum at your heart, light rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you and place them in the state of a Guru Buddha. So now you yourself and all sentient beings surrounding you are each now seen as Buddha. Each of you have at the heart a moon disc, from which is a white syllable, ah, sparkle yellow hum, and it's encircled by the mantra, of the Buddha, which you now begin to recite. So through the recitation of the mantra, the two purposes are achieved. And I think that through this virtue, may all of us quickly achieve the state of a Guru Buddha and place all sentient beings, without exception, into that very same state. So exhaling a little deeper. Inhaling deeply and then exhaling and letting your eyes flutter open. Bring your awareness back into the room. So we're beginning a new course today called All About Karma. So the course itself lasts for 10 weeks total. We've got 8 actual classes. Then there's a review and a game called the Rebirth Game, which will help us understand a lot of the stuff we've been talking about. Many of the names and phenomena are mentioned in that game. During these 8 classes, we'll begin by looking at what karma is. We'll see that karma is basically an intention. How we can create the future through the different activities that we engage in, through the different acts that we engage in, we create a future for ourselves. There's a vast spectrum of actions. Actions kind of our body, speech, and mind. And then, of course, there's the experience of karma itself. So we look at all that, how we can purify karma, and also look at the path forward. Now today, we're going to just look at what karma is. And the second part will be looking at some of what we call intentions and the conditions that support them. Now, in this teaching today, I'll be sort of answering 9 questions. If you have the book about, it comes with this course, there are a number of questions that are being asked. So 9 of them are going to be answered today. So some of these are, does karma refer to the cause or an effect of an action? Is it cause or effect? Or is it both? What does the word mean, this word karma? And why is understanding it so important? And what if we don't believe it? What happens then? So we'll do that with the first section. And then last, we're going to be looking at karma as intention. So we have intentions and then the acts that follow the intention. So we'll look at those two and what makes them up. Now, these books I found very, very useful. This first one, what it is, karma, what it isn't, and why it matters, by Trailing Rinpoche, is really written really well, very easy to understand. This Lama had a background in Western philosophy and psychology, so it's really written for us, and it's like the history of karma through the Hindu perspectives and then how it was taken over by Buddhism and the different changes that were made over time. That gives you the whole historical background to this concept called karma. The other two, as you can see, they're written by the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron. Both of them are just full of the details involved with karma. And again, they're very well written and easy to understand. I would suggest that if you read those two books, you'll find yourself reading like a paragraph and stopping and thinking about it. There's so much to sort of think about. Okay, so let's have a look first at what we're going to look at first. And this is karma the cause or the effect? So I've got this picture up here of this guy sitting amongst a big round dominoes, right? And he's just knocked down the first one. So there's an action that takes place in there. The action is I push over that first domino. And then effects follow. Like that first one hits another one, then another one, then another one, another one. And after some time, the last one falls and it falls on his head. Now he's got a sore head. The sore head is like the effect of pushing that first domino. So is karma, is it that first push? Or is it the pain you feel when that domino lands on your head? That's what's basically being asked here. So there's only two choices, isn't it? So it's cause or effect. So it's the action that causes the effects. It's not the effects themselves. So when stuff happens to you, that's not karma. It's the effect of a karma. It's the effect of something else that took place before. Yeah, so karma properly refers to the cause in terms of action, not the effect or the result. This word karma is from Sanskrit. It literally means action. And it's the mental intention and resulting physical or verbal action that creates an imprint on our mind stream. So it means that this guy who'd be sitting there going like, he thinks about it, right? He hasn't acted yet, but he's thinking about it, and then he goes, so that thinking about it, that's the karma. That's the intention. Then he goes, so intention here, intended action. Goes right round, then the effect takes place. What does karma mean? It basically means that intentional actions create future effects. You think of that fellow sitting there, he has an intention, hasn't done anything yet, but then an action, the physical action follows. And then the result comes around. And every choice we make creates causes that can ripen as future experiences. This is a karma is like planting seeds in a garden. What grows depends entirely on what you plant. And as I suggested, what we do, what we plant, has an effect not just on us, but upon the environment that we find ourselves in. And so if you look at this picture here, you've got these little seeds, you put some in, right? That's the seed, that's like the karma. Then it covers it over with earth, then they water it, the sunlight, all those sort of things come together, and this seed will actually change and become this plant. So we look at ourselves like we create lots of actions. In fact, we're doing actions all the time, mental actions, verbal, bodily actions. They're driven by intentions. If they're driven by conscious intention, there's your karma being created. Now about the sad differences concerning the intention. So here I put up a picture of a woman who's a writer, and you can see she's intending to write something, but she hasn't written yet. That intending to write, that's the karma. It's the mental stuff. Then the action that follows is called the intended action, and that will be the typing and the writing of the story. The intention is mental karma, mental movement. Intended action is what follows externally later, like your voice, you open your mouth, you start to speak, or you move your arms, or you use your body in some way. Is this okay with everybody? Is it sort of explained simply enough so you understand? It's quite straightforward.
Has the karma happened already once you have the intention, even if you don't do the intended action?
Yes, it has. And it will bear very different results. Well, because the rest of it wasn't followed out. So it's one thing to have these intentions, but if they're not acted upon, so what actions are really taking place is the mental stuff. Has it come out into the world yet through our voice or through our body? So it's not a complete action.
Mental.
Yeah, it's just the mental part. The intention is the karma. Yeah, so an intended action hasn't followed yet from your intention.
So already you've got two different
results. That's exactly right. Yeah. This is what Lama Zopa was always talking about, the intentions. The most important one is before the activity. You know, so when you wake up in the morning, start the day with a bodhicitta motivation. That intention to become enlightened for all beings is karma, the best karma you could actually create. What you do after that is all the intended actions. The actual karma is the mental.
There's an online question from Megan. Why is our intention not enough? Like when we try and generate good karma for the whole world, for example.
Well, just think about it. It's the same way when you think that you think, I want to win the lottery, but I don't buy a ticket. You know, you can want everybody to be hungry, but if you don't, to be fed and not to experience hunger, if you don't feed them, then they stay hungry. So the wish is not enough.
So if you do, say, a medicine Buddha mantra at work, because she works in a hospital, how does, is that a action?
Yes, it is an action. So if you are reciting it, it's the intended activity that follows the intention to recite the medicine Buddha mantra. You have to say, why am I reciting the medicine Buddha mantra?
Yeah,
to become enlightened and to benefit everybody at the hospital. You would become enlightened through this activity and all beings would be benefited by it. Yeah, so even just reciting mantras, it said, well, it depends, isn't it? Geshe-la said this again and again. He said it might be just virtuous speech or non-harmful speech. Of course, that is a speech activity. If you look behind, what's the intention? It might be sometimes you find yourself quite distracted, so you're reciting the mantra to get your focus. So there's your intention, to get more focus. You want them to benefit by it. Whether they do or not, that's unsure. But from your side, if you are reciting the mantra with this intention, you definitely benefit. That's one thing you can be sure of. For instance, this happened to the Buddha. Right? So Buddhas don't have any ignorance. If they try to help a person in the Sangha, they do all the right things, the Buddha's enlightened, no problem, he does all the right stuff. The other person sees him as a charlatan and a fake. Right? That's on the other person. That's their karma, not the Buddha's. And there can't be ignorance coming from a Buddha. So you just do, just take it to yourself. And then my intention is this. This is the intention. Your actions, like I said, after they leave your mind and go out to your body and speech, they might not be as skillful as you would have liked them to be. Right? But that's, like I said, that's the action of that follows the intention. The karma is actually the intention. This sort of sums it up, this line from Arya Nagarjuna from the Precious Skull. He says, so here we go. From non-virtuous motivations come all sufferings, and likewise all bad migrations. From virtuous motivations, all happy transmigrations and the pleasures of all lives. So with non-virtues, there's some sort of harmful aspect about that. So again, it comes back to what's driving this non-virtuous behavior. It would be an intention of yours. It's always the intention. So he's saying, whenever you come with non-virtuous intentions, all the sufferings follow. If you come with virtuous intentions, all the happiness follows. Follows you, right? You're the one creating it. Now, so as far as this question, so is it important to understand karma, to have some sort of belief in it? And the answer, of course, is yes. It's very important. In fact, once you become a Buddhist, once you've taken refuge, that's what you're meant to be doing. That's the sign of you having taken refuge, that you now act in accordance with the teachings of karma, cause and effect. Once you become a Buddhist, that's what you've now decided to do. You work out, all my sufferings have come from basically unskillful behavior on my own part. I didn't know what to do. I just did the best I could. But that was our basic motivation, right? Most of us aren't out there trying to harm people and hurt people, but we're not all that skillful. Our motivations are primarily about ourselves, right? What we want. We're basically first. And so we've acted on that. And the consequences have followed. So once we've worked out, life's not working out so well for me. There must be something silly I'm doing or something I don't understand. If you decide, okay, I'll go along to Buddhist teachings, listen to them, and if you think this all makes sense to me, I'm going to become a Buddhist. It makes sense. Then from that, once you have taken refuge, this is your job. You start acting in accordance with the teachings of the Buddha, especially in terms of karma. This comes like the ethical basis. So, you want to be a spiritual person, well, it depends upon ethics. But you have to know how you hurt yourself and how you hurt others and how to restrain yourself. What are the causes? So karma is all about that.
Said something.
For the non-virtuous motivations,
Patience.
or the non-virtuous intentions come all sufferings. You might be able to, you might speak very harshly to them. You may act in such a way that it doesn't look like that.
That doesn't look
No,
like
that's
it.
right. Yeah, it may do. It may look that way.
Yes.
That's why it's important to be sure of what your intention is, to bring a good intention to what you do. Oh, you can always be, clear about yourself, isn't it? It's great to know, no, honestly, I meant this. I'm not trying to do anything else. It's like this. This is why I'm acting like this. Okay, so we're going to have to move to this little second part about is it important to have a belief in karma or to acknowledge its importance and so forth? And the answer, of course, is yes. Right? Why? Because it empowers us to create our own happiness. I said before, karma is a cause. Therefore, if you want to be happy, an effect. Find the cause that will produce that happiness. Create. Act on that cause. Use that as your cause. All of us have an intention to be happy and to avoid suffering of some sort. But then, seeing this, what are the causes that will do that? Because we've all been trying it. We all try. It doesn't work out so well in many cases. But this is the great thing about it. Knowing how karma works, you know then how to create your own happiness and how to avoid the sufferings that you've normally got entangled in. There's a lovely verse, I think, in the Bodhisattva's Way of Life where Shantideva, as a way of creating compassion for people, he says, look at all these sentient beings. They all wish to be happy, but they rush away from its causes as if they are fleeing an executioner or a hated enemy. Look at all these beings. They all wish to avoid suffering, but they rush towards the arms of suffering as if they were a beloved friend. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's what I've been doing. I thought I knew what it was to be happy. And in fact, I'm not very happy at all. So it must be I must be making some sort of mistake. So you might find this yourself, right? So this is why this is so important, because this is what it teaches. How to avoid sufferings, how to bring them, how to diminish them, how to bring them to an end. Why? You find the causes. You remove the causes. You don't support the causes anymore. You don't put them into your mind stream anymore. What supports the happiness that I'm seeking? Oh, it's these causes. Ah, that's what I've got to put into my mind stream. That's why it's so important. And basically, karma works like a garden. Each thought and action is a seed that grows into your future experiences. So with every kind intention, the result is some sort of happy event, good event. Non-virtuous, harmful intentions are bring about the opposite for yourself. Now, what if we said, yeah, but I don't believe in it. I don't believe in karma. So it's not going to affect me. But now, basically, not believing in something is not really a protection, is it? Just because you don't believe something doesn't mean the same thing.
I'm not going to get pregnant.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's, well, I could say that. But, just saying, no, I don't believe it. It doesn't have much effect on things. Look, I put this picture of a young girl falling through space. Like, you know, if you're people who say, I don't believe in gravity. So, well, okay, and whether you believe it or not, objects fall through space. They're drawn towards the Earth. If you jump off a building, you will fall. You won't go up and you won't just stay in space. That's called gravity, whether you believe it or not. It's the same thing with karmic cause and effect. It's not about belief. So you say, karma isn't about belief. It's about recognizing how actions shape our experiences. When we understand this, we gain the freedom to create different outcomes through mindful choices. Even someone who doesn't believe in karma continues creating causes and conditions through their actions that will ripen into future experiences. The beauty of understanding karma is that it opens possibilities rather than limiting them. Instead of being stuck with, that's just how I am, you can change. You realize, no, I can change. I think we all know that. You sort of go again and go, then I'm going to change. I will change myself. So, anything interesting you'd like to bring up? Anything interesting I've said so far?
What's bothering me if karma is mostly the intended action, many of the things I do throughout the day, I just have some vague intention. It's not really specific. I'm just doing stuff. I haven't been explicit about I don't want to harm and I want to help, but that's there. But how explicit do you have to be?
As explicit as you possibly can be. It should be. This is the same with like renunciation and bodhicitta. Right? So these, you've changed your whole way of being. It's like explicit, what I'm saying. So I intend to drive a car. Right? I could intend to drive, but am I actually driving it? So you've got to, you have this intention and then there's the activity that follows. So the activity of making this, of creating these virtuous mind states is to become familiar with them. So you do it again and again. That's why each day, in terms of mind of enlightenment, you're meant to wake up, you say it. You know, we're meant to be saying our prayers aloud so you can actually hear yourself telling yourself the way you want to behave. I intend to be this type of person. So you say those prayers. So that's how you intend to be. Until you, no, intend to be that, you are that. And so the mind of enlightenment is saying, I intend to be a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. So you find out how to train yourself in doing it, and you keep saying that until you are a Buddha. And you don't have to say, I intend to do it. In fact, it could be that you don't even need to say it again. Like the mind of refuge is like this. You don't need to say it. You could be an actual, genuine, authentic refugee. You don't need to say, I take refuge in Guru, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, because you've already done it. So this intention should become, they call it, firm. So you don't need to think it through. It's just the way you are. Like once, you know, if I intend to drive, then I learn how to drive. I don't need to think what I intend to drive anymore, do I? I can drive. But the intention is accomplished its goal. So it's a bit like that. That's useful. So it says in this part here, the complexity of looking at karma as being the intention of an action and not the result is it's not easy for us because in the past, popular culture has misrepresented karma to be the effect. You see, lots of people talk about things that happen and say, oh, that's my karma. Yeah, that's not karma.
That's the result.
That's the result of a karma, but it's not karma. And so this is the thing that makes it difficult for us, like I said. The other thing is people often think that karma is like a punishment or like a fate. Like if you do this, then this will take place. No. You've done this, there's your cause right there. That's the karma. It doesn't follow that the effect is going to take place. If nothing intervenes, it will take place. Like for instance, if you have a packet of seeds, of grass seeds, right? Each of those seeds is a cause for a grass shoot, isn't it? You can have a whole lawn of grass. Each of those seeds is a cause, right? If you don't take them out of the packet and put them in the earth, you're not going to get any grass. Right? You're just going to have a packet full of seeds. So a packet full of seeds could produce a lawn if it meets all the right conditions. But if it doesn't, you're not going to get a lawn. You're just going to get a whole lot of grass seeds. That's why I'm saying the cause does not mean to say the effect naturally follows. It doesn't. If nothing interferes, it will. But if you interfere, it won't. It's just like we gave with the grass seed analogy. Even if you took them out of the packet, right? What if you put them in a frying pan and heated them over the fire and just burnt them all down? Oh, now I'll put them in the ground. You know, again, you're not going to get grass. So we need, you need definitely the cause. It's got to be supported. So just having causes does not mean you get effects. This is the whole wonderful thing about once you realize how this works, you're, oh my gosh, I can play a part here. I can create the happiness I'm seeking.
So is that what stops it being fatalistic?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So learning to separate cause from effect requires continual mindfulness or reminding yourself of intentions before acting. When I just read this, I was so shocked, and this was really recently, because I was just reading, oh my God, the things I've done to myself. The other thing is karma's natural law operating regardless of belief. So not believing in it doesn't stop it. So the most important thing is karma functions whether you believe in it or not. It's like gravity. But when you believe it or not, you jump out of a building, you fall. Karma's got similar types of understandings. If you do this type of thing, this follows. From non-virtue, all the sufferings. From virtue, all the happiness. The happiness. That's what's sure. Okay, just adjust the posture. Comfortable in the seat again. Drop your shoulders. Find a comfortable place to put your hands. Then close your eyes, if you like. And let your body breathe itself. Bring your attention to the present. Release tension with each exhalation. Now we're about to act, we're about to meditate. So now create an intention. What is your intention for this meditation? And that intention you've created is a karma. So karma is intentional action that creates an imprint on the mind stream. So the karma is not the experience that follows the intention. And if you can grasp this truth, then you shift from passively accepting circumstances to actively shaping your future through skillful choices. The karma is like planting a tree in fertile soil. The act of planting is your intention, whether it's careful or careless. It shapes or takes root. And as the tree grows, it follows natural laws. It responds to sunlight, water, and time, regardless of whether you watch it or believe in its growth. So what intentions do you carry into your daily activities? This question asks us to consider how our current choices are planting seeds for future experiences. So I wonder how our life might be transformed if we could witness each intention before it became the action. Awareness itself begins to purify karma at its source. And when you observe the natural laws of cause and effect operating in your life, so how does this knowledge influence your response to both pleasant and unpleasant experiences? Perhaps from today, you might choose to witness your intentions before they manifest. This is because in this mindful space lies your freedom. So let's make the wish that the wisdom of karma to guide us on our path to awakening, for the benefit of all beings. And now breathing into your nostrils. Exhale and let your eyes flash open. So here we have another quote from the Buddha from a sutra called the Rice Seedling Sutra. It's a really famous sutra because it describes the 12 limbs of dependent origination and how cause and effect work. So the quote says here, because there is this, that ensures. Because this came into being, that came into being. So this is a sutra where the Buddha compares karmic seeds to rice seedlings, which grow from very specific grains of rice, which is going to lead us down to what we call the differences between substantial causes and contributory causes. So if you look at them both, they're both seeds, like these two grains of rice, but they produce different effects. We'll look first at what they call the substantial cause. So a substantial cause is the primary material that transforms into the result. As you can see, this is how it's written here. Now, the way that this is often explained is we start with something simple, then we move to the other object. So here we're going to start with something simple, and it's something physical. So this is easy to do in the world. Find substantial cause, and go, oh, that's what they are. This is one here. In this event, this is a substantial cause. Now, in this event here, we're looking at the substantial cause, meaning the main cause for a fruit tree. The substantial cause for that particular fruit tree is a seed of that fruit tree, or for that fruit. So we've got that right here at the beginning. We've got fruit with seeds. So we take the seeds out, and then we plant them. The seed will germinate, it'll become a sprout, then it becomes a seedling, and you'll see at this stage the seed is gone, isn't it? The seed has turned its way into being a little germinating thing, and then it becomes a sprout. It's got all these root systems there. There's no seed there. It's gone. Changed. The seedling transforms over time into a tree. The tree flowers. The flowers produce the fruit, and then the fruit are more seeds. The thing that changed here, or that was transformed, was the what? The seed. That's right, the seed changed. This is a physical phenomenon. Can you think of any other physical phenomena that might change into something else?
An embryo.
An embryo. Yes, that's right. An embryo is a great one, isn't it? It comes out like, you know, we call it, what do they call it? The seed? No. Yeah, that's right. It's got all sorts of funny little things. If you look at this in the big picture, you go, oh my God, it's a huge progression, isn't there? And then suddenly this fetus will come out and become long enough an old person. Very different. Right? It's just it's one thing turning into another. Can you give me something else?
A butterfly.
A butterfly, that's right. Butterfly is another object that will change from one thing into another. And so, in fact, there are many phenomena that do this. So here's one. It's clay being transformed into a clay pot. Like clay in a potter's hands, it becomes a clay pot.
Crochet is another one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So these, it's just a matter of sort of identifying the first. So these are phenomena that turn into something else. Without that phenomena, that thing is not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, no wool, no crochet.
No wool, no crochet, no clay, no pot, no mum and dad, no fetus, or no, you know, whatever, and so forth, right? That is vital, that substantial cause. Now here, so now we get to move along a little. So karma has to have a substantial cause. So karma is mental, remits the intention. So that intention is the substantial cause for something to take place. So for instance, I'll tell you a good example. Suppose I'm hurt. Suppose if you see someone and I feel hurt about it.
And by wood.
That hurt, that's not karma, is it? Just the fact of Miffy's speech, right? I feel hurt. In response to this hurt, now I get angry. Now I've created the karma. I have an intention to strike back. There is the action. So now I've got anger as a substantial cause that could come across to her, right? But so, but it doesn't stay as anger. Next thing it turns into resentment. Yeah. So I don't strike her, I don't say anything, but I resent what she said to me. So now anger has turned into something of similar type as a resentment. Now if I resent her long enough, perhaps malice or grow. And now, so it's called anger, resentment, malice. And with the malice, you intend to harm them. From the malice, what the other, I'll pause in there. Of course, this is just.
This is escalating in an alarming fashion.
And this is what they do. Just like this, they de escalate in an alarming fashion. Karma grows. This is what we mean by karma grows, it increases. And it's all just come out of one thing, one this one seed, right? The seed of anger that I had on my mental consciousness. So this is a substantial cause, right? So it affects not just in the outside world like clay pots or hours turning into days and minutes and so forth, transformation. It also works mentally. This is where it's important. So oftentimes we get really upset. Can the other person be the substantial cause of your anger and distress? And Sandy shaking your head, no. Anyone else say, does anyone say yes?
It seems like they are.
Yes, it seems
because
like
that's
they
how
are.
We all act.
That's how we all act. That's true. But why can the other person not be the substantial cause of my distress? Now, we say other people are the causes of our distress, don't we? You have to ask, well, are they the substantial cause? Are they the main cause? If you say no, why? So what, you know, a little while ago I told you about what a substantial cause does. Right? So if another person was a substantial cause of your problems, what would have to happen?
Something else.
The person would have to turn into your anger. Just like the seed turns into the plant. That's what a substantial cause does. It turns into an effect. Does the other person turn into your anger? Impossible. Never happened. So straight off, you've got to go, okay, that person cannot be the main cause of my problems. That's impossible. The main cause, the substantial cause, must be my own mind, mental. It's mental stuff. This is great knowledge because you can change it now. Imagine it was the other person. You'd have to change them. Good luck. This is dynamite knowledge. This is, like I've told you before, it was the one time in different time we go and put the rubbish bins out and I'm going, why should I do that? Blah, blah, blah. I start muttering away, get resentful, realize what's going on and thinking I'm blaming her as the main cause of my suffering. And I just went, substantial cause, impossible. She can't turn into my distress. So it must, the main cause must be here. I must be causing these problems. My mind is causing these problems. Then you can do something about it. You can change your mind. There are types, so the karmic behaviors that follow the intention.
Yes, the intended actions.
The intended actions. So that gives you, I think, gives you power. But before that, you're sort of at the mercy of your mind. Once you understand how the mind creates it, then you can play a part in it.
So the key then is to ask, does this turn into this?
That's right. That's what I find. That's the simplest thing I come with and go, whoever the person, like I said, when others say things or behave in certain ways in front of us and to us, and we find it distressing, who do we blame?
Yeah.
Them. That's right. The person. And when we blame them, they're the main cause of our distress. Huh? They're not a secondary cause. We're not a person that, something blah, blah, blah. No, no, it's you. Right? That means we're looking at them as the main cause. Well, they can't be. But like I said, the main cause, the substantial cause, has to turn into the effect. Well, what's your effect? Really, distress. Gosh, she looks the same. Don't look like she's turned into distress. So it must be back here. Well, when the four parts of an action are complete, that karma now has the power to produce a fruitional effect, meaning a rebirth state. If all the parts aren't in place, or even if they are, And the action is very minimalist or small. It doesn't have the effect, doesn't have the power to produce a rebirth effect. So that's for that. But that's coming up in our other classes. Yeah. So these causes that produce not just one effect, but multiple effects. Like I said, if the causes aren't fulfilled by the four criteria, then the effects can be quite different. So you've got substantial cause, right? The simple thing that it just turns into the effect. Clay turns into the pot. The seed turns into the plant. That's examples of substantial cause. In your own mind, you go, okay, substantial causes. Suppose I've got anger. Is a substantial cause. What's it going to turn into? You know, something of similar type.
Hatred.
Yeah, it could turn to hatred, which is related to anger. It could turn into resentment. It could turn to all sorts of niggly things. You know? We sort of know this. Now, so that's one cause. Now, there's a second cause called the cooperative or the contributory cause. What's good about this in terms of how to remember it is these are causes which help the effect to take place, but they never turn into the effect. So here we go back. So here we've got, remember we had the substantial cause, it's the seed. Right? That's going to turn into the flower of the plant, right? It needs contributory causes. Substantial causes on their own can't produce effects. They need help. What help? Contributory causes to contribute to their effect. In terms of the plant seed, soil, water, nutrients, warmth, light, space, all these things, none of them turn into the plant, but they contribute to the growth. So substantial turns into it, contributory don't turn into it. But they support. So if we had the idea, the last picture there, of the potter making the clay pot, what is the substantial cause of the clay pot?
Clay.
Good, that's the clay. What is the contributory cause to that clay pot? The wheel, the potter, the water, all sorts of different things. The light to be able to see that he's doing it. There's so many contributory causes that are needed to be in place. But without that clay, you don't get a clay pot. So both are necessary. One is more important than the other in terms of our emotional being. Because you know that, you know, when we're in the company of other people, they could be the contributory cause to our happiness or despair. Have you ever had the case where the person isn't there and you could be in despair?
Mm.
Right? That happens, doesn't it? So what's more important here, the contributory cause or the main cause?
The main cause.
The main cause, that's right. And so Buddhism is really like being like, okay, you have the main cause, you can do something, we can all do something about it. Because many of us have plenty of instances, haven't we, where we've been hurt, we've all been hurt, right? Then we would have thought that person did this and that to me. Right? That's our normal thinking. Now when you come across something like this material and go, well, they're a cooperative cause. Okay, go, yep, okay. Now just sit here now and think about what they did to you. You become distressed again. But whether they're here or not. So the contributory cause is secondary. The real person is not here. But when you start thinking about it, you're bringing to your first substantial cause other contributory causes, mental contributory causes. You don't need the actual person there anymore. And you'll kick off, right? You'll get upset again. So cooperative causes help the effect to take place, but they never turn into the effect. They're like a symphony playing music. Each musician has to play their part. They never turn into the music. They make the music, but they're not the substantial cause for it. Sorry? What is the substantial cause for music?
If the symphony is a substantial cause, you still need musicians to play it. Otherwise,
musicians.
Yeah.
The action.
Yeah, but there's got to be something that turns into the music, isn't it? The phenomenon that we call music. It requires all those instruments to come together. Yeah, you could say that. That's right. There's no intention to do it, but it would have been done. But again, the composer doesn't turn into the music. So the composer has the idea, and he's got to write it all down. These are all contributory causes, and then out of it comes this other thing. Yes, that's another way of talking about the conditions. Yeah, yeah, the better word for a condition and cause is exactly the same.
And cooperative cause, same?
No, but then there's all these other different ways of looking at causes, so they all have different names. So in this division, there are many divisions about causes. You don't think there's just heaps of them. But this is a very simple one, especially in terms of karma. Right? So it's substantial cause that turns into a thing, contributing causes.
You call it cooperative cause.
Yeah. Contributory or cooperative causes. Causes cooperate in helping the effect be produced. It's important to know this so you can know where to put the focus of your mind.
Or know who to blame.
Yeah, what to blame, yeah. So the actual blame you've got to come down to is your own inner disturbances, your own past karmas and things like this, right? So what's interesting for you? Is there any questions? Is there anything you'd like to ask or to clarify? There's different ways of talking about karma. That's certainly one of them. But like I said, karma affects yourself primarily. But you affect others. Right? So your karma has an effect on others also. It's an indirect effect. Yes, it's not shared by anybody else. You have karmas where a number of people might have all brought to mind the same type of intention. And then you call it like shared karma.
Angela asked, does purification have to be as explicit as intention? Ideally, you know, so we have an explicit intention. Does the
definitely.
Purification have to be
oh,
as
for sure.
Explicit?
Yeah, for sure. It really helps. So in terms of distinguishing intention from intended actions, we've covered two parts, right? Intentions from intended actions and then substantial causes from cooperative causes. This is the section we just talked about, right? So in terms of the first part, what distinguishes intention from the intended action? The easiest way to recollect this is that your thoughts plant the seeds of karma before your body or speech does anything. Now, the seed is the karma. The intention is the karma. That is the action. It's an action of mind.
So what if you're really unconscious about your
intentions? So then they don't have much power. But the more intensity and awareness you can bring to why you are doing things, the better off you are. On both sides, of course, like if you really intend to hurt somebody, which this is the worst thing. Most of the times we want to create non-virtuous actions, everything is very clear and done well. When it comes to the good stuff, it's like really, it's not as deep. You don't, you know, like when we want to hurt somebody, we often like think it through, right? But when you want to help somebody, you know, you think about it. Well, what do you do? Is your thinking as deep as that? Is it narrowed, focused?
I'm just seeing a lot of people's focus on, say, making money. You know, that's a really big driver for a lot of just even just going to work every day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So is it, if the intention is just to make money, is that the intention, or is it why you want to make the money?
No, well, it depends. The person says they'll have reasons behind this intention to make money. They might be to protect my family, might be because you've come from a background of poverty, you never want to have that happen to again. Might be that you want to, you know, do all sorts of things. But from that, we all come to this idea, I need to make money. So you get all these ways of thinking to support a direction for your life.
Question from Megan. If we accept emptiness and that nothing exists independently,
mm-hmm.
then doesn't that mean that our karma also impacts other sentient beings?
Of course it does. Yeah. Our actions do impact others. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm still a bit confused about the definition of karma. So many people say it's action.
Yeah.
So, but you're saying the actual word karma is actually the intention.
Intention. Right? So it's like, yes, there are, karma means action, right?
Yeah.
You can say, what sort of action? What type of action?
Yeah.
Is it a verbal action? Is it a physical action? Or is it a mental action? Yeah, mental action. Mm-hmm. What mental action? Intention, volition. That's the karma. So it's a sort of way of like having a general way of looking at Cheryl, and then you become specific. So I think volition has this idea like a movement about it.
Like a purposeful.
Yeah, purposeful intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they mean by volition. Purposeful intentions. If you do that, that's karma, a purposeful intention. So like to know that, then like, you know, what is your purpose?
Because if you do an action but it's accidental, like you smash someone's best china, and it was an accident, that's really different than if there was an intention that you're cross and you went and broke in and smashed all their china.
Yeah. It's the same type of thing, you know, when they have court cases, isn't it? There's many times when one person kills another person. Sometimes it's accidental, sometimes it's deliberate. Well, you know, the court works it out, they have this discussion, you find out if it was accidental, the outcomes are very different for that person than if you decided to murder them. And different outcome. You know why? The intention. One would have no intention, it was sort of accidental. They had no intention to run them over and kill them and that. It took place, yes, no intention there. So that sort of karma is a lot less. And if you deliberately decide to say, no, I'm going to run them over, and you set out to do it and do it. The one very weak, you know, is, like I said, it's about the intention, not so much the action that follows, even though that's called karma too. It's not action, what we're really talking about here.
There's also a question here from Megan that if karma is like... you know, in our mind, and say we generate hatred towards someone, does this mean that, you know, we could generate hatred to someone we love and it's still just all in our mind? Like, is there a difference between generating hatred towards someone that's hurt you, that you're retaliating, or then if it's just in your mind, like how does the... Does it affect others?
Not necessarily. It depends. It's highly dependent. There are many types of karmas that produce very small effects that don't produce... the effects are not consistent. The effects depend. But like, you know, when you put a seed of an apple tree in the ground and you nurture it, and suppose you put 50 seeds in it, they don't all plant the same. The seed will always produce that. The apple tree, sure. But then you've got all these conditions around it, contributing factors. They have a great response on Is a tree tall? Is it bushy? Is it lean over to the side? Does it have many apples or none?
So Megan was saying, if I do something with a negative intention, does that basically generalize across to all sentient beings? That negative intention, does that then affect, say, the ones that I love as well?
What's the object that she's...
Say, the person who hurt you, you have...
No, it's not all sentient beings. It damages you, the fact that it will take you longer to become enlightened if you had this intention to enlighten all sentient beings. Yeah,
but it doesn't generalize across everybody.
No, it's one person. Yeah. Okay, let's do our last meditation.
She says, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
So we talk about substantial and cooperative causes. The thing to take away from this, its significance, is that effects arise from multiple factors. So when you go looking for the source of problems, understand it's never one thing. You're not looking for one thing. One thing is not the cause of the problems. There are multiple factors. Like I said, just the seed alone, you do not get a plant. You need all those multiple factors. It's the same with our problems. We identify a single problem, it's got multiple causes. One of them will be your own mind going, that's a problem. You seeing it as a problem. That's one of the contributing factors. So it says students find this challenging to identify the substantial cause and mental phenomena where transformation is less visible than physical examples. So this is very true. You know, it's easier to look at a clay pot or a tree growing and yep, substantial cause. This, when you come and try and analyze your own mind, you go, I'm doing this. What's the substantial cause? Is this a substantial cause for something or is this the effect of something? Okay, let's do a meditation. So again, just get comfortable, folks. Just try and make sure your back is straight and your shoulders relaxed. You place your hands where they feel comfortable. You can close your eyes and keep them open and just let your body breathe itself. Set an intention for this meditation. Create some good karma for yourself. And just take a moment to consider how your very own mind creates the blueprint for everything that follows in your life. But intention is the movement of consciousness towards an object, while intended action is its physical or verbal expression. Your thoughts plant karmic seeds before your body or speech does anything. Now, this distinction places ethical responsibility at the level of mental states rather than just outward behavior. Now imagine a sculptor visualizing a statue before touching the chisel. Now that's intention. The actual carving is the intended action that follows. So how often do you notice the gap between deciding to do something and actually doing it? So this space contains the opportunity to observe your motivations. But do you have one in that space? So like the marble that becomes the statue, substantial cause, your consciousness transforms into experience, while circumstances, the cooperative causes, merely assist without becoming the result. So I wonder what patterns might change if you focused on purifying intentions rather than just controlling actions. So perhaps sometime during the day, you might be able to commit yourself to observing these subtle movements of your mind before they manifest as speech or action. Now, understanding the mechanics of karma brings freedom to your path. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through the mouth, let your eyes flutter open. Okay, so our takeaway today, I want to take home, is that means that karma is, the action is one of intention. And karma is an intentional action. Actions depend upon causes and conditions. So then we look at substantial causes and contributory causes, which are also called conditions. And the wonderful thing about it is that our future is dependent upon us. You know, if we know how the mind works, then we can work the mind. And if we don't, it'll work us. That's what it does, right? It just thinks, it just takes off. And if we go along and it's not based on reality, we'll find ourselves in trouble. So if you are doing this course, or if there's material up online, please have a look at pages 10 to 11 in the FPMT notes, and then pages 3 to 6 in the LTC notes. That'll just contribute to what you've heard today, and there's just more writings if you sort of forget, or you want more detail or more clarity. And next week, we're going to look at the unfolding of karma. We'll talk about the four principles of karma and what we call seeds. So you know, we often come across this agricultural metaphor, the seed. So we'll go into a bit of detail about what these things actually are. Some of this is not clear at all. I think it can't be just like sitting like seeds in the mind, like grass seeds or something. Yeah, we'll have a look at that. So now I hope this has been useful to you, sort of interesting. I've been trying to change it. I've been changing these courses a long time. I just want to try and make it a bit simpler now so we don't do too much in depth, so we just cover a bit at a time.
I think this was pretty intense.
Yeah, we could just sort of,
actually,
put it together. Okay, so we came here, we set our motivation, we brought an intention to what we were doing, an intention to listen. So now what we want to do is take this intention that we had and again just set it off in the right direction. But our class has come to an end now. So how we do that is through the practice of dedication. So please join me. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state honored of the Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise in them. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to the star of the stars of the world. And then prayer for the Dalai Lama's long life. The wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world. To the incomparably kind, tender Yatsa, I beseech, may all your humble wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, the prayer for the quick final of Rupesh's rebirth. In holding and spreading the Lord's precious and complete teachings through exploration and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you I make this request. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We'll see you upstairs for a cup of tea and a chat if you like.